Hey, good morning. This morning I'll be presenting an interprofessional case that has happened at the University of Nebraska Medical Center. I have no relationships to disclose this morning. And before I get started, I am proud to present this morning in my former hometown of Washington, D.C. I moved to Omaha, Nebraska about a year and a half ago, and by a show of hands, how many people in here have been to Nebraska? Yes, great. I usually ask that, and very few people have raised their hands. So we're somewhere in the middle of the country, and I like to show these slides and send salutations from our chancellor, Harold Moore, and the dean of our College of Public Health, who was my chair at George Washington University, where I was on faculty before I joined faculty at University of Nebraska. And so most people think Nebraska looks this way, and the reality is majority of our state does. But this is where I live, in Omaha, Nebraska, the only place that she probably could have recruited me from Washington, D.C. to actually live. And I love this city. After a year, this is my home, and I don't let anybody talk about it, especially if you've never been there. So the University of Nebraska Medical Center is a very unique place in that we are indeed a medical campus. We have a College of Medicine, nursing, pharmacy, dentistry, and we just got accredited last month for public health. And so there are opportunities for multiple interprofessional educational opportunities. And we also have a School of Allied Health, in which they do a lot of public health, I've been surprised by. So I am particularly interested in maternal and child health. And one of the reasons that I do the work that I do is that as an African-American woman in my 30s who has not had a child yet, what perplexes me is that I know that my risk factors when I become pregnant of having a child that's born before 37 weeks or having a child that will die within the first year of life exceeds that of a Caucasian woman who never graduated from high school. That's a problem for me, knowing that I've gone to the best institutions in the nation and that I earn in the top 15% of income in the United States. And so there's a big question mark for me as to why that is. And so I purposely chose a career that integrated medicine with public health and policy, because I think the answers and the solutions to making sure that the outcomes for both of these women are similar lie in those different categories. So again, this is our state, and the red highlights, which are Douglas County and Sarpy County, they are the most populated. And as the deputy director of the Center for Reducing Health Disparities, when you talk about disparate outcomes, you will find them in Douglas County, right in the backyard of the greatest medical center in Nebraska, as well as in Sarpy County. So we have stark disparities in these different variables, and the reality is that they all impact reproductive and pregnancy outcomes. And so prevention is essential to improving reproductive and birth outcomes, and increasing awareness is the first step to a 1,000-mile journey. And so the question that was posed was, how can preconception healthcare be made a priority and feasibly implemented at an academic medical center, namely UNMC? And what was important is that everyone has, despite what your specialty is, a different role in preconception care. A lot of people will think that the two specialties that are involved are pediatrics and OBGYN. And yes, I think since you have children and you have mothers in those specialties, that their responsibility is very different. But dentists also have a role in preventing adverse outcomes in pregnancy as well. And so we wanted to make it relevant. And when we're talking about medical students, and I've taught medical students, there's a difference between medical students and residents. I found medical students to be a lot more optimistic. The doctor-patient relationship has a very different role than when you become an intern and you're responsible for carrying an entire service, especially an OBGYN, of maybe 20 to 30 patients. And certain things get left out. And so when you come to a medical center and you're talking to house officers and you're talking to physicians and you come as a public health person saying, oh, the social determinants of the health, and you have people sitting there saying, my pager is going off, I have 18 patients, and I have to be in the OR in the next hour, make it relevant to me, what is it that I can do? And so the process is that the Department of OBGYN secured funding from Nebraska Health and Human Services, about $10,000 to $15,000 Title V funding, and they wanted us to do something that was specifically interdisciplinary. And so we pulled representatives by volunteering from internal medicine, psych, family medicine, public health, and our health disparity center, and identified what the objectives would be. And I know Wisconsin is here, and Magda Peck is leaving us to go to Wisconsin, but she was instrumental in making this happen as well. And so last year, on October 27th, we convened across specialties, health officers, attendings, and had an entire morning dedicated to preconception care and what the role of the provider would be in preconception care. And these are the objectives. Another thing to note is that when you're in a clinic all day, you're not able to necessarily follow the recommendations from the Institute of Medicine, or to know what the National Preconception Health and Healthcare recommendations are. Brian Jack and Mary Kay Moos wrote an entire article sponsored by the CDC on what clinical recommendations should be for preconception care. But if you poll an average OBGYN or a pediatrician, they have no clue this exists. And so we wanted to bring that importance and significance of what's been highlighted in the data, what should be happening, encourage interprofessional discourse, and then assemble a preconception healthcare action committee to continue our efforts post-seminar. And so the first part of the session was a didactic session, like really what is preconception health, what's being recommended, what's the life course model, which is, if you're in public health, you hear life course all the time, but again, if you're a clinician, it may not be a framework that you're accompanied or accustomed to. And then we wanted to hear from them, and so we had breakout groups that were interdisciplinary and really asked the question, you know what's going on in the clinic. You know what your limitations are. This is the information. This is what's recommended. What are you currently doing? What's not being done? And what do you think is essential that should be done that can change outcomes in your patients? And so we had 57 attendants. We were 5 facilitators, 11 faculty, 21 residents, 16 medical students, and then we had 4 support staff across 3 different institutions. The breakout groups were asked to propose kind of pie in the sky, long-term recommendations to short-term recommendations. And of course, billing came up and reimbursement, which is a major limitation to actually doing preconception care in alignment with what the clinical recommendations are. But thanks to the Institute of Medicine report and the recommendations to Congress to mandate preconception care be covered at no additional cost to women, with healthcare reform, this hopefully will become less of an issue, and we would like to get our trainees who will eventually go out into private practice and into academic medicine to be practicing things now related to preconception care. So some of the recommendations that we received directly from the house officers and the attendings are here. Some of the things that stood out were every menstruating adolescent should be on a daily multivitamin and recommended iron. One thing that we're doing now in the OBGYN department that has been instituted across the department is every single contraceptive prescription or IUD, anything that has to do with contraception is accompanied by a prenatal vitamin sample or at least a recommendation to use a prenatal vitamin and what the importance of that is in terms of reducing neural tube defects. And just like all our previous speakers, majority of our house officers were engaged, but of course you always have those people who, one of the comments said, I'm being expected to do more and more with less and less, and I'm already maxed out, which basically said, I'm not doing this. I don't support this. I do what I've been trained to do, and this touchy-feely public health stuff is not something I'm interested in. What came out of that interprofessional education session was a 7-person committee across internal medicine and the different specialties that we discussed. And we even had residents that were really interested. And Dr. Libby Crockett is one of our OB-GYN residents who's not here today. But she's completely changed her career goals. She's going to be pursuing an MPH. And she presented at the 3rd National Preconception Care and healthcare conference in July with us. And so we meet bi-monthly to prioritize the recommendations that were made. And like I said, one of the recommendations that we thought was feasible was everybody should be recommending some type of prenatal vitamin. And if it's a postmenopausal woman or a woman who's no longer in her reproductive ages, then we could be recommending a multivitamin. We've submitted abstracts, so this presentation is directly out of that committee. We've done similar things to poverty simulators, which is a life course model on reproductive outcomes. We've incorporated the life course perspective in grand round presentations in our didactic sessions. And we've increased awareness amongst our patient population. So we've given presentations at our federally qualified health centers in Douglas County as well about what preconception care is and what the role of the patient and the mother would be. And then we've submitted grants. The HRSA R40 we submitted a couple of months ago, and that came out of a recommendation from the conference in which one way to feasibly do preconception care is to integrate it into electronic health records. And so we're starting that process, and we'll hopefully get funding to continue. And we got funded again by HHS this year, and Dr. Michael Liu, who I consider to be one of the fathers of the life course model in preconception care, will be joining us for grand rounds on November 16th. So you can come to Nebraska if you like. And I won't go through these, but this is the progress in the Department of OBGYN, and the next two slides are slides from Dr. Libby Crockett. Again, this woman was set on fire from this conference, and she's really interested in the role of not just women in improving birth and maternal outcomes, but also the role of men. And so she's given a couple of different talks, and these are some of her slides. And I love this. What? You're pregnant? How did that happen? In six figures. And so I think it's really important to have house officers and attendings who support preconception care to be talking to their own cohort. And these were three of her slides that she presented. So our next steps is that our committee continues to meet quarterly. We're working on a national advisory committee in which Magda Peck has volunteer to lead. I need to talk to her now that she's leaving. I'm sure she will hopefully be able to still have that role as well. We're looking at research and educational strategies of collaborations across different specialties. So really, is there a role in preconception care for a general surgeon? And if there is, what would that be? What would that message be? How will we deliver that to the Department of Surgery? Grand round presentations, which I just talked about, and again, expanding the H&P. So the OB-GYN H&P has not changed in probably 100 years. And what we're looking at is, without making it that much more extensive in terms of, instead of it taking 3 to 5 minutes, maybe what could we add where it would take 6 to 7 minutes but provide very useful information. For instance, we know that the greatest predictor of having a preterm birth is a previous preterm birth, and also if you were born premature. But how many people have actually asked their patients, well, how many weeks were you when you were born? And we don't ask that. We may ask what your history of your previous pregnancies may have been. And then one thing is to encourage consistent BMI calculations. In terms of vitals, that was one thing. Our patients were not being weighed, and definitely we weren't taking their heights. And so making sure that we're tracking that in the charts as well. And so I use this to say that these different women here, traditionally and statistically, we know they all have different risk factors. They have different profiles in terms of what their pregnancy outcomes will be. And the work that we do at UNMC and the work that I think most of us do in this room is to ensure that sometime in our lifetime, I will be able to show this slide. And when I ask you who has the greatest risk factors for an adverse pregnancy outcome or birth outcome, you won't be able to tell me just based on a phenotypical look at these women. So I like to thank all these people because none of it's possible without a team. And thank you.